Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm speaking with D.E. Foster, who is a former database developer, contract screenwriter, and writing instructor at the University of Colorado. For the past 7 years, Dee has experienced an odyssey of debilitating withdrawal complications from the long-term use of clonazepam, which is Klonopin, a prescription benzodiazepine. Unable to continue to work in his previous professions, Dee turned his focus to writing a book, Benzo Free, The World of Anti-Anxiety Drugs and the Reality of Withdrawal, which was published in the fall of 2018. The following spring, Dee launched the Benzo Free podcast, which is now on its 67th episode and reaches thousands each month. And in March of this year, he started a new YouTube channel called Easing Anxiety, which helps people who struggle with chronic anxiety find a way to a better life. Dee spends his remaining time researching a new book, speaking about benzos, and relaxing at his home in northern Colorado with his wife and dog. Please stay tuned for our post-show talk. Thank you. Hi, Dee. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Geraldine. How are you today?
Good. And I'm so glad to finally get you on. So before we get going on to talk today, I just want to have people get an idea of what led you to being put on a benzo, how long you were on it, and did you notice your health getting worse while on it, or did it even help at all for a while?
That's a great question. Yeah, I'm happy to. I took my first benzo in 2004. It was prescribed by my general practitioner for stomach distress. I've always had difficult stomach issues since I was a child. And over a period, different times, I'd go in to get it checked out. And at this time, for some reason, that physician decided that an anti-anxiety drug might be good. So he put me on clonazepam. I didn't think much of it. And with no warnings, of course, that's the usual story we all have.
Right. Yep.
But stayed on it for 12 years until a new physician. I had seen other physicians along the way. None of them had, of course, suggested I come off of it. And then I saw a new physician, and she actually said she prescribed me Prozac because she said that'll help you come off the clonazepam. I didn't know what she was talking about. And then I started looking it up. And then the same story that so many of us have, I saw the horror stories and freaked out and you know, then figured out what to do. But as far as symptoms during that time, not as much at the time, but in hindsight, yes, I definitely saw difficulties throughout the time that I was taking it. One of the key one was vertigo. I actually, when I was living in Kansas City, went through a series of physicians because I had severe vertigo. I had the patches on, these scopolamine patches that help with dizziness for a trip. And anyway, long story short, they thought it might be a brain tumor. They thought it was all kinds of things for about 6 months. And finally, the top ear doctor in Kansas City decided that it was actually the patches that was not allowing my brain to heal. Anyway, I thought after that even though I got better, that I was just having residual vertigo from it. I never thought it was anything else. And it wasn't until I went through my withdrawal, came out the other side, and my vertigo stopped that I realized it was the Klonopin.
Wow. So question, did you ever take the Prozac, or once she kind of said, I'm going to put you on this and get you off, that you realized what was going on and then didn't take it and just decided to come off the clonazepam?
Yeah, great question. I did take it for a bit. The problem was she prescribed me 40 milligrams up front.
Wow.
And within 3 days, I had a severe panic attack, and I don't usually have panic attacks at that time. I soon discovered what they were. But, and so I stopped it right away, and turns out that was much too high of a dosage, especially for somebody who deals with anxiety. I also tried Celexa during my taper, again, for about a month, but kind of like we were talking just before we started the interview, I kind of wanted to, I think, let my body heal as naturally as possible. And so I did as little medications or supplements as I could.
Good. So what method did you use? So you went online, and what were you finding, and then what did you decide? How did you decide to taper?
Yeah, it was that first night that I had, that's my third day on Prozac, and I went online because I was thinking, maybe something's going on. She wants me to come off this drug. Maybe I should figure out what it is. And of course, I wound up in a severe panic attack that night. Part of it was, of course, the 40 milligrams of Prozac, trying to adjust to it. And of course, part of it was I just didn't know what I was on. I had no clue.
Right.
So those stories just started to, you know, attack me. And then eventually I eased off and calmed down. And then I could start to think through things. And I was still in a pretty bad state. But I had to figure out how to start tapering. And I had to find a physician that would help me taper. And that was a long story, but I finally found one to help me. So
the one who actually wanted to put you on the Prozac to get you mm-hmm. off the benzo, she knew nothing to help you? You had to go find somebody else?
Well, actually, after she prescribed the Prozac to me, I didn't feel comfortable going back.
Right.
I kind of felt like that was my counselor at the time. I was in therapy at the time, actually told me that I should report her. I didn't feel like doing that, but it did give me enough warning that maybe I should try something different. I had a doctor back up in the mountains. We used to live in Estes Park, Colorado, who I had a lot of faith in and just was kind of a homespun kind of doc, you know, the one you can just sit down and talk to and that kind of attitude. And so I thought I'd go try him. He didn't feel I needed to come off the drugs, but when I told him I wanted to, he said he would help me. And regardless of the fact that he may not have been benzo wise, he was the perfect doctor for me because he helped me through it. And he knew I wanted to. Yeah, he listened to me. I don't know if I changed his prescribing practices or not. I think I may have a little bit. But overall, even though he didn't insist on me coming off the drugs, he helped me when I decided to.
Good. I mean, I never found anybody here in Boston. Can you imagine? No one.
It is so hard. I know it's so hard to find people.
It is. So how is your health today? So wait a minute. Before I even ask you that. So in the end, the tapering, was it just like you and him talking and it was just symptom-based? Because, you know, how much information did you have back then?
I had some because I started to read and I'm pretty voracious in my reading. And so I read everything I could find. Found several different resources sites. I came across your name. I came across a lot of Ashton, of course, and I mm-hmm. came across all the good information. And so I had that prepped when I went to see him. The thing he told me that scared me was he did not want me to withdraw. He wanted me to wait 6 months. And I was pretty upset by that. Of course, in hindsight, I determined that was brilliant. I was not mentally stable at the time. I was freaking out about what had happened to me. He wanted me to get stable and he told me a couple things. And so I started yoga. I started exercising. I started meditation and I went back 6 months later with a plan in place based off of the Ashton manual and calmly said, okay, I think I'm ready now. And he looked at it and he said, yes, you are.
See, now that's great. Cause when I do my, when I first started the podcast, we put out four of them and then my husband got sick, but in it, I have getting ready to taper. And it was all about getting yourself ready, getting your support lined up, getting your diet in order. So he was actually right. Because today we see people who get it all lined up first. You don't have to be in a hurry. Their bodies actually get stronger. And then they can just do that nice symptom-based slow taper. Big difference between those of us that, you know, I mean, there was no information for me. So
totally
he was really good. He really was a good match for you.
I kind of think of what you just said as climbing Mount Everest. I'm not going to decide to climb Mount Everest and start tomorrow.
Yep.
I have to prep. I have to get my body ready. I have to get my mind ready. I have to learn skills. There's so much I have to do if I want to climb Mount Everest. Well, as you and I know, benzo withdrawal is kind of like Mount Everest.
It is. Yeah. Well, in mine, I say it's like, you know, one day you decide to run a marathon. You don't just get up and run it. There's
same thing.
Getting ready. So that was the scenario I use. It's exactly right. So I'm so glad you had a good doctor. So now that you do your taper, you've got a good doctor in your pocket, which I always say we don't have to have them because everybody can't find them. But it just adds that extra layer of support from that medical professional. So
I always recommend that they have a doctor, and even if it takes a while to find one. But the thing I do say is it doesn't have to be benzo-wise as long as a physician listens to you.
Exactly.
And will work with you.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to have somebody who actually listens to you and cares about you, even rather than benzo-wise, because that's the person that will stick with you.
Absolutely. And, yeah.
So
but again, you know, we know that there are people out there that they never find anybody and they're on their own.
So,
at least in the beginning, the first doctor who finally told me it was the Ativan making me sick, but she didn't know how to get me off. And then being in Boston, you would think I would have found somebody. Nobody. So I was on my own and I kept trying it. It wasn't like I didn't try. I was on my own. So, you know, I didn't come off the right way.
No, I mean, I'd say so many. I know I always try to encourage people to find a physician, but I understand that most of them can't.
Yeah, I do wish everybody could. I think it makes a world. It takes that extra layer of fear and anxiety away as you're tapering. So it is.
The key thing for me was that you want to get checked out. There are symptoms you have along the way that you want to know if it's something more serious. So I think it's essential to have a physician at least who understands what you're doing, who can then say, okay, yeah, I'll run an EKG for you just to make sure.
Right, you know, calm that symptom down, right? Exactly. You're not having a heart attack. It's withdrawal, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Right. So how is your health today?
It is good. I had a wave recently. In fact, I'm still in one a little bit now. It's not unexpected. I think a lot of us are under a lot of anxiety and stress lately. And as we all know, that always likes to kick off waves. So I think that's a big factor for me. But I haven't had a lot of them over the past year or so. So I am definitely improving each year, but I am almost 6 years off now, and it's taken me a while to get there. I'm definitely not 100%. I still have symptoms. I don't know. I may always have symptoms, and I've come to an acceptance, a place of acceptance on that.
Right. But for me, I didn't even, I was getting better, but then I made a lot of mistakes. But at 5 years is when I got that first big lift of symptoms.
Really?
And then my second big lift was at 11 years off. Like you think, all right, I was accepting where I was. And in 11 years, another big jump in my health. And
be giving hope to another veteran. Thank you.
Yeah. And so, and I remember getting hope years ago from, there was a group of them over in Ireland that we used to be in touch with. And I've lost touch with one of them that used to actually get together. And one of them at 16 years, total 100% recovery at 16 years. So I always remember that. And I wish I could get them back into the groups to give people that hope.
Oh, I love that story. I might have to share that too. That's great to great stuff to provide people. I do hear a 10-year mark a lot of times for people that are in and around that. Seems to be some people feel they're finally 90% are fully healed. And for the people who have protracted, and of course, I always want to remind people, we're the minority. You know, there's a lot of people that within 18 months, you know, can heal fully. But for some of us, that's not the case.
Right. I think genetically, I've had the genetic testing done. I don't know if you have. So I know why it took me so long to heal.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of factors. I had factors and I made mistakes along the way. So I don't know if those also complicated my situation. It's quite possible.
Right. Right. So I know when I was suffering, you know, and I didn't want any, that's the first thing. We don't want anyone else to go through what we went through. So I started, being very proactive, bringing awareness. So at what point did you decide, the first thing you did, you wrote your book, correct?
Yeah.
And where were you in your recovery when you started it?
That's a good question. I got to think back now. What happened was did a lot of research because of what I was going through, and I was doing it for myself initially. I just read everything, and it actually kind of helped me through my taper and acute because just kept me busy, you know, trying to find every bit of information. I wasn't just on benzos. I was studying psychology and happiness and medicine and anything that was even related remotely, some spiritual practices, anything that could help me process what I've been going through. But then I realized I had read over 1,000 articles and a bunch of other information, and I felt it was a waste if it didn't turn into something. So I decided to write a book, and I published the book in August of 2018. And it felt really good to have that out. And then I launched a website about a month later based on it, and that's the Benzo Free website. And then the following March, I think, is when the podcast, I came up with the podcast. So,
So it was around the same month we put ours out. We both did it in March of 2018, but then my life changed literally 1 month later.
Yeah, actually my podcast came out March 2019.
Okay,
you came out with yours earlier,
2018, okay.
Yeah.
So now speaking of the podcast, first of all, for the book. So what's the website?
Sure, yeah, the website is benzofree.org. The book is titled Benzo Free: The World of Anti-Anxiety Drugs and the Reality of Withdrawal. And it's on Amazon, of course, and everything. If you go to benzofree.org, you can, of course, learn more about the book, about what, you know, the podcast, all of that is based in that location.
Good. Good. So we each do our podcast shows a little differently. And I like that because the more the merrier.
Oh, gotcha.
And I'm hyper. As we were talking before the show, I get extremely nervous. My son can't believe I get so nervous with each one, but I do.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, you know, when I listen to yours, you just seem so calm and relaxed.
Oh,
and I'm like, how does he do it? And, you know, I was saying how, if you could see where we are, we're up in a closet because, you know, with the clothes and everything around and yours, we're looking
at acoustics. Yep.
Yeah. Great acoustics in the closet. And I I mean, you could see the soundproofing behind you and it would just
look actually great. Not soundproofing.
I was like, he's got
insulation on the basement walls. It was already here.
All righty.
I wish I was that advanced. No, this is a basement, unfinished basement. I just have a desk and a bookshelf and some lights in the middle of it, and that's all it is.
Well, hey, it looks very, very professional.
Thank you.
So your show, you address certain subjects. So I do more with people. I mean, we both do it with people, but I like that you pick a certain subject. So somebody, if they're having a problem with anger or, you know, whatever digestive issues, they can listen to that. So how do you decide what to do on your shows? And you've got how many now?
This morning, I released 67.
Wow.
Number 67. So I started
out. You're number 20. You're my number 20.
Yeah, but you had to take a break for a while. That's not fair.
We've had to. And that's, you know what? That's the beauty of this, because our lives have to come first. So I want to be very clear with people. Always put yourself first. Me, D.
I agree.
We can do what we do when we want to do it.
Yeah.
And whatever happens in our lives, take a break, walk away, you know, because our families come first and our health comes first.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your shows, some of the things you've addressed.
So, I started launching five or six right at once, because that's what I had read you're supposed to do with podcasts. So I was just learning as I was going. But most of the ones I do a mixture. Some, of course, are topic oriented, like you mentioned. I did a 14 part series a while back that was 14 separate episodes on the symptoms of benzo withdrawal. So each one was a different category, kind of based off of your friend, you know, Ashton's categories that she listed in her manual, loosely based off of that. And so that was good. And then I've gone back and revisited some of those. I've had guests, much like yourself, of course, who have been kind enough to be a guest on my podcast. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I've had different physicians on there and some other people, and I'm planning on having more coming soon. In fact, I think I'm going to have Dr. Stephen Wright back again on the next episode.
Good. Yeah, that
he's
would
always
be
a
great.
Good one. Yeah, he and I work on a bunch of different activities here within the state, because he's local to
right.
me.
Right, and you
so
do him in person.
Yeah, yeah. So we work on a lot of things together, which is nice.
Yeah. And it's nice when we can do it in person, because I can see them and we can, that whole, it really does make a difference. So we have done a few local, you know, when somebody's in town or whatever. But now you've gone from the book to the podcast, and you now have a YouTube channel. So can you tell me about that? Because I didn't know until you and I were writing.
I know it's I launched a YouTube channel. It's actually called Easing Anxiety. And if you're looking for it, if you go to benzofree.org, just scroll down on the homepage. There's a big picture and a link right to that page. But it's actually more geared on the general anxiety audience, not just people with anti-anxiety medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a couple reasons. One is, I realized that probably 60-70% of the things we were talking about on the Benzo Free podcast were based on anxiety. A lot of our symptoms are aggravated by anxiety. Anxiety is one of the largest symptoms people deal with. And since these were anti-anxiety drugs, much of our discussions often wound up back with anxiety tools and trying to find ways of managing that, as you know as well as anybody. And then the second thing was, I was trying to figure out how to raise awareness through a different method. And I thought, you know, if I started a channel just on anxiety that would attract the general audience of people dealing with anxiety, I can also then slip in information about anti-anxiety medication and how there's alternatives and better ways to get help and better things to seek, so that maybe less people will wind up dependent on the drugs in the long run. So I divided our podcast into two groups. One now is Easing Anxiety, which are mostly YouTube videos, and those are focused on anxiety and just anxiety, not so much on medication. And now the Benzo Free podcast is more focused on withdrawal and dependence. And that way I've just kind of divided my content into two different channels.
That's smart. Very, very good. Yeah, thank you. So really the easiest thing is if people go to the benzofree.org website, they can get to everything from there.
Yes, I do have an easing anxiety website, but right now my easinganxiety.com actually goes to benzofree because I'm still building the website. But there will be a website for easing anxiety at easinganxiety.com probably in the next couple of weeks. I'm just finishing putting it together, so I'll have another website. But they will both always have links to each other.
Right.
Because they're I think of them as sister productions.
Absolutely.
They help each other out.
Yeah. In fact, today I just contacted this website about them possibly doing a show, and it's all about anxiety and things to do without taking meds. Because even if you are going through withdrawal and you never got put on it for anxiety, well, you're very anxious going through it. So I wanted to talk to them. So we'll see. I got an email that, you know, they'd get back to me.
Oh, that's great. I hope that works out for you.
Yeah. I think people don't realize what goes into to getting a podcast ready, to doing the YouTube. You do a lot of work. So you want to tell us a little bit about what you do to prepare for each show or your YouTubes?
First of all, I'm blessed. I have to give the credit to my wife because she has had a steady job. Well, she had a steady job until a couple of months ago with the virus.
Right.
But because she had a steady job, I had the luxury, I'll admit, of healing with some time and also being able to fully dedicate myself to this. And I know a lot of people don't have that blessing, and I'm very grateful for that. So I had the ability to dedicate myself to the podcast and to the YouTube channel now full time. But yes, I was for a while putting in 70, 80 hours a week on this, and that's how much time it takes to put some of this stuff together. I finally backed off on the podcast a bit simply by going from weekly to twice a month. When I launched the Easing Anxiety YouTube channel, so I could have time for that.
Right.
So that helped a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of work. I mean, like, you know, we have to reach out to people if we want guests on the show and try to set that thing up and try to schedule time. We do research and try to find content to share. We're often working in the community. I know you do a lot of that, and so do I. And that takes up a lot of our time. It's funny. I want to back up for a second. You had mentioned about the nervousness before you got on here.
Yeah.
And I was sharing with you that I do too sometimes. And I never used to. I used to teach screenwriting throughout the country and at college. And I loved, I could be in front of 1,000 people and it was fine. Of course, benzo withdrawal changed some of that for me. And it was only, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there was a general rounds meeting for the Anschutz Medical Center here at CU Health, Colorado University of Health. And it's all part of the, we're working with the director of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Public Health and Environment on getting some benzodiazepine practices changed in the state of Colorado. Wow. And on some of the work like you've been doing out there in New England. And so we're working with her, and there's a lot of great people. Anyway, I was listening in on the general round. So we're talking 75 psychiatrists or so are people working in the psychiatric, you know, and working with addiction and dependence. I say addiction because this was also affected people who do have problems with addiction. I'm not saying that from the benzo standpoint to make that
I
clear.
Know. Yeah, I know. You can't say that word.
Yeah,
but if it slips in, it's not the worst thing in the world.
I know. Yeah. But I always want a caveat and make it clear.
I know.
But my point is that Dr. Steve was on that. Dr. Stephen Wright and some other ones. Dr. Christy Huff was on the call.
Okay.
And I decided to pipe in at one point because they were asking general questions. And this is never a problem for me before. And I started to talk and I started to have problems. And my voice was cracking. My arm was shaking. My eye was twitching. And I knew what it was. I know why I'm doing it. And I finally decided just to say what was going on. Just like you did with me before we started this. Like you just did on this interview.
Right.
And just be honest and say, hey, by the way, this is an example of what we go through. Right now, I'm trying to talk to you. It's something that never would have bothered me before. And I'm having trouble getting my words out without my voice cracking and dry mouth and everything. And I'm just saying that because it's so poignant that you brought that up, because I still experience this now. And then when I get emotional about talking about something, which, of course, as you and I know, benzos are often a very emotional topic for us to talk about.
It is.
I have trouble doing it without the emotions overtaking me at times. And when I speak publicly, that was a problem for a while. And now I actually use it. I actually just tell people this is what's going on here, you know,
and it's okay. That's good. I'm going to learn from that because I've had to speak in at our Massachusetts State House now three times. But I also got a call the night before the governor's opioid meeting because they wanted to bring in, they wanted me to come in and talk about benzodiazepines. So I have a warning at 10 o'clock the night before. I've got to go in and speak. Well, this isn't like our hearings. I'm speaking. I've got 300 to 400 people behind me.
Yeah.
And I did it. And it's funny because everybody says each time, you never know I was nervous. I'm so nervous when I'm doing it. And
I remember
but you
I
do
saw
it.
The video of you talking. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you never know. But my body, I wonder, well, would I have gotten nervous years ago prior to benzos? I don't know. But
yeah, you
just do it. I always say, all right, they're uncomfortable feelings. I'm going to get through it. Okay. You know, and like
and
I said, we've talked and yet I get nervous doing these every single time. I don't know why.
Right. Yeah, I don't get so nervous when I'm recording my podcast because, like I told you before, I can always post edit. I clean things up. And what was interesting with the Easing Anxiety YouTube channel is I started doing that on my videos too. And I was trying to talk and then I would say break when I'm talking. And I do this in the podcast sometimes. And that tells me when I go back to edit to cut that out and I'm going to retake it.
Right.
Well, when I started on the YouTube channel, I kind of put some outtakes on the end of things I was talking about, but I was always having problems and I started to get some feedback from people and they said, stop editing, just be yourself.
Yeah.
And I started doing a series of vlogs on my YouTube channel that are just me and I almost do no editing on them. And it's amazing how things flowed better. And I would just start talking to people I get it. A lot of good feedback from that kind of thing.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. I think the lesson for me, at least through all this, was be yourself. And that includes if you're nervous talking and you have difficulties, just admit it, talk about it, and tell people what's going on.
Right. And hey, and if the phone rings while we're in the middle of doing the interview, that's going to be in
my
it like it just
all the time during those. And I say, and there's Bear saying hi, and I go on, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, here we are in June, and very shortly, we're going to be having another World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. And last year, you were live. And so that's how I got to see, you know, how you do everything. So are you planning on doing anything this year with the pandemic? You know, I know a lot of people are wondering what to do. So are you planning on anything?
That's a good question. I've not spoken to Nicole or anything over at WBAD. I know they have other things going on and might have a different direction they're going, which is great. If they're looking to pull me in, that's great. If they don't, that's great. From our side on Benzo Free, because that's what I did. That was through WBAD last time. I didn't set that up. They did.
Right.
But on our side, I've actually thought about going live for my first time through Benzo Free.
Oh.
And I might do that. So I'm toying with that idea, but I don't know right now. So
okay,
nothing
so that's
guaranteed.
Still, that's still your World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day thing.
That's what I'm looking at. So, but I know a lot of people are doing great things. I know you got some stuff going on. What are you planning on doing?
So Garrett and I are thinking about going live on the WBAD website that day because we thought, okay, why not? We can address everybody no matter what state they're in. Mainly we're talking about here in the United States, but no matter what country, what we're going to suggest that people can do, even from your sick bed, things you can do that are not stressful that I think can have a bigger impact. So that's won't be long, just pretty short, just to get out there because we want to support it. And it's certainly, you know, gotten bigger and bigger each year.
Right.
So we'll just do something a little crazy here. I like to I like to ask people, what's the because, you know, doctors have said some pretty crazy things. What's the craziest thing a doctor ever said to you while you were sick? Now, maybe nobody said anything like crazy. Like mine told me to go buy a red car and take this 5-week free Paxil and I'd be fine.
Oh, well, that's the miracle drug. Yeah, that fixes everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that red, go get myself a red sports car and take the Paxil and I'd be fine.
That's the solution, like, huh? Okay.
Yep, that was it. Well, we've heard
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know there's been plenty of them. And trying to pull them is tough. But yes, I have had, I think my problem is because I correspond with, you know, so many different people through the, I mix my stories up with theirs.
Right, right.
But as far as ones I've heard, of course, you know, we've all heard it's not dependent, it's not addictive or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I have usually most often the ridiculous part is throwing another drug at me, you know, but if you take this, this will counteract that and you'll be better.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And I think that's the most ridiculous one. And the ones that gets us in so much trouble is then we start to wind up in the polydrugging train that just doesn't end.
And it's, and this is what we're trying to prevent. This is what your book, your podcast, your YouTube is about. This is what we've all been trying to do, is still just spread the word. You know, eventually it's going to catch up. What we really just want is informed consent. Be aware of the drugs that you're giving and don't just give it.
Yes. And make it not the first response.
Exactly.
It's always seems to be, and especially because, and it's GPs that seem, 90% of these prescriptions come from the general practitioners.
Right.
We really need to work with them, because I'm not saying psychiatrists prescribe all that much better, but they at least are more educated on psychiatric medication.
Right.
Whereas the general physicians aren't as much, and they have 7 minutes with a patient on average.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not enough time to find out what's going on. And the best way to get them out of their doctor's office and happy is a pill. And to be honest, many of us go in there, and now I didn't, and I know a lot of us we've talked to, but some people go in there looking for the pill.
Right.
And some of us don't want to hear, well, let me refer you to counseling. Even though counseling is proven to be probably the most effective for chronic anxiety.
Right.
But they, you know, we don't want to hear that. But to be honest, the thing is they don't usually suggest it either.
No, you're never going to hear that. I think that's a rarity.
I can't. I think I've heard it once from one doctor all the years I've been going through this. Almost always it's, what kind of medication can we give you to counteract the symptoms or side effects of the other medication you're on, which is counteracting the side effects of the other medication you're
on. And you know, as much as you and I laugh at that, it's so true. And it's like, when will it stop? You know, but that's what we're doing. We're trying to put a stop to it. We're trying to, you know, clog that hole up so we don't leak anymore.
Yeah. If you deal with people like you and I do every day, it's just so hard for us to understand why this is still going on.
Yeah. Right. How can it be all these years later? How? But it does. But I think eventually, you know, a little bit more time, we're going to get there. So, Dee, before we close, what are some words of encouragement you would want to leave? You know, I always feel like what I always needed, and it's free, is hope. Any words of encouragement or hope you want to give people?
Absolutely. I would be happy to. The number one thing is, anybody can withdraw off of this class of medication if they choose to. If you educate yourself, if you get a good support system, if you learn tools for managing your fear and your anxiety, and decide to come off the medication and decide to do it slowly, and I recommend with a doctor's supervision so you have that person in your corner, anybody can do it. And I have seen people, you know, on it 20 years who came off these drugs and are doing fine now. So anybody can do it. It can be hard at times, but anybody can do it.
Right. Good. Very good words of encouragement. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And I look forward to seeing what you do on July 11th.
Well, thank you, Geraldine. And thank you. I just got to say so much for everything you've done. You've been such a huge influence in this community over the years. And I was so grateful to have you on our podcast and that you invited me to speak on yours. I'm just really happy that you are part of our community.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you on July 11th online then.
That sounds great. I'll see you then. Take care.
Okay. Thanks. All right, Garrett, we just finished the interview with Dee Foster, and I thought it went really well. He's a great guy. He's done a lot of work over the years.
Yeah, so you have played me Dee's podcast a couple of times, and, you know, our experience with podcasts come from, you know, the Joe Rogan experience and all these other things, but we don't really have too many that are just benzo. They just focus on benzos, and Dee's does, so it was always good to have another podcast to say, like, well, this is what he does, and we like what he does this, so, like, maybe we can use something similar to that in ours, and so it was good to actually talk to him.
Yeah. I mean, he has a whole different style than we have, and to me, he sounds so professional. He's doing it, and, you know, we were joking because before when Dee first came on, he could hear what we were saying, and I was saying how nervous I get after all these times doing it, and you were saying, why couldn't I drink a beer or something to calm myself, which I will never do, not even a sip. Or, you know, we were joking that I just get nervous.
Yeah,
and
we should explain it. That's a running joke.
It's a running joke.
Of us. I wasn't actually saying you should go get
right.
have a drink. Or
exactly. It's just that I get nervous each time. And you were saying, how long is it going to take before I calm down? And probably never. But once we get rolling, I'm fine. You know, it's just normal, you know, to get a little nervous doing it. So he was great. He's done a lot in his state. He's got the podcast, the book first, then the podcast, and now his YouTube channel. And it's just, when people have been harmed, that's all they want to do is just stop somebody else from going through what we went through. And he's so active, you know, so proactive in trying to get the word out there.
Yeah, you can tell he has a lot of passion for what he's doing. And you're right. It's funny when you actually hear where people really do record their podcast.
Yeah.
Because when you do hear his podcast, it sounds like it's done in a studio. And there must be, you know, all sorts of professional stuff. And people have even said that about some of ours. They're like, oh, where do you go to go do that?
Yes.
Well, your walk-in closet, and we use Joe's
suits
from the 70s to deaden some of the sound of the room. And that's about it.
If somebody ever saw the closet, they'd be shocked of the amount of clothes, because my husband does not ever get rid of anything. So it's like overpowering here. I'm down to I have to just kind of push my stuff over onto one side. So it was really we have the perfect studio to be up here. We have a little table and we just kind of sit in here. So, you know, it was good. And all we can tell people is, you know, go over to Dee's, listen to his podcast. He does his differently than we do ours. He interviews people also, as we talked about, but he, you know, particular symptoms, which sometimes somebody wants to hear about their symptom. Well, I have this and I have that. So it's great because you can just go and listen to it.
Yeah.
All right. So another great podcast done. Thank you so much, Garrett.
Thank you.